many I don't see gentlemen in the other side. No, only members. I see only members, and I don't see gentlemen. I only see ladies. Isn't it? You normally said honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, and you can't say gentlemen when they're not there. Well, I think we need to start with our business today. Let me take the opportunity once again to welcome everybody present. More importantly, the sponsor of the proposed legislation that we'll be dealing with, Honorable Collins. You are welcome, Honorable Member. Members, we will be, of course, I want to believe that everybody has got the package, the minutes, the discussed document and the agenda included. Next week we will be going to the strategic planning, and we are experiencing a bit of a difficulty in securing resource personnel from our universities for obvious reasons that it is time for exams. They're struggling to to be released by the institution to come and assist ourselves. But we will find a way as to how do we then close that gap that we initially thought academicians from universities will help us. The program of the strategic plan will be starting on the 5th of June. So we will be at Stellenbosch, one of the institutions around there, but basically it's in Stellenbosch. Probably there will be transport for members who doesn't have their own vehicles, and communication to that effect will be done accordingly. The morning session, we will be starting at 9 o'clock. The morning session will be dedicated to the resource personnel who will be, assisting us to interpret the legislation that giving mandate to us. We will be also looking at the international threat and also look at the mandate of the committee as per the rules of parliament. That's the morning session part of. And going into the afternoon, we will then allow our own researcher to present a progress kind of a report as to how far have we gone, particularly looking at both 2010 and 11, as to have we met the target we put for ourselves in 2009. I do know that many of you were not there when we held the first strategic session to develop a 5-year plan to say this is what we need to do. Then after she would have been presenting that to us, we will also present to you that, 5-year plan so that we evaluate, looking at it and amend it in order to move forward with it to the end of the term. We will do that, and also we will look at the concept paper for the study tour. I'm sure on the concept paper for the study tour, we will also make sure that it goes along with the draft. You may recall that when we drafted the initial intention to have a petition bill, that documents will then be circulated, for you to recap, so that when we are going for the study tour, we will also, try to understand what intention do we have at the end of the study tour and other plans that moving forward. So we will then conclude by mapping forward the five-year plan in, you know, as to what are the remaining things that require us to be focused on in a year to come. I'm sure you will remember that when we are talking elections, next year is the only, almost three quarter of next year is the last part of ourselves. The last quarter and the last year, you don't even mention them. People will not even listen to you when you talk any work of parliament. They'll be talking, you know, election, you know, issues, starting to fight. If you call a meeting, they will be throwing things to this side and you will be throwing things to that side. So you better avoid to have that scenario as much as you can. Therefore, we better make sure that our plan of having that petition act and complete the work that we have intended to should be, you know, targeted towards September 2013 as the last part where we'll be, you know, concluding our business. So that's in a nutshell what will, you know, be happening in the strategic session. We will have the last meeting in the week of the, what is the day there? Wednesday, that other week. I'm sure somewhere around 6, 7. It should be, off the 13th or 12th, around there. So that it will be our last meeting for the quarter. And we would then, over the weekend of the 16th, Sunday, we'll then be leaving for Canada, come back on the 23rd. So that's what I thought I should actually just, you know, try to outline before we move into the business of the day. That concludes my welcome and input, and thank you. If anything, you are welcome to clarify your mind if I've confused you in one way or another. It looks, yeah, everything has been perfect. Thank you very much. We are now moving to apologies.
Good morning, honorable members. We've got two apologies from Honorable Daga and Honorable Kubai. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The rest, we are all here. We are starting with minutes. Thank you. You know, sometimes we don't check these things. We thought it's obvious. And when they are upside down, you speak to them. It means instead, today we will start with the minutes instead of, you know, deliberations of the business. Can we check the minutes of the 23rd? Do we all have them? On page one, anything? Page two, Honorable you leave it. I wanted to get her what she knows why I'm doing this. Thanks, Honorable Mluma.
Thanks, Chairperson. On page two, the third paragraph from the bottom, it was suggested that the committee should not debate the issue, but rather to wait. Can't we have it as rather, but rather wait? Not to wait.
Come again?
Can't you remove the two?
Oh, rather wait for the EHA.
I was just wondering if we shouldn't rather say, should not debate the issue, but to rather wait, to rather wait for the DHA and IAC. Just turn the two words around.
You are saying.
Chairperson, what I'm saying is, I will just read it. It was suggested that the committee should not debate the issue, but to rather wait for the DHA and IEC information. We can also change it a little more to say, should not debate the issue, but instead wait for the DHA and IEC information. But instead of rather. But, you know, as I say,
I think let's find the simplest way of language. But the content is very clear that we are trying to say that what requires is the language part as to the Queen's language needs to be, you know, perfect when we close it. Obviously, we may leave it, but to...
There's another way. to say, it was suggested that the information from the DHA and IEC should first be obtained before the committee debates the issue.
But also, I'm sure we need to remove the suggestion, because we finally agreed. When we say suggested, it means we are still, you know, want someone to decide.
Oh, yes. So the committee resolved to first obtain information from the DHA and IEC before debating the matter.
So any other besides this one? Is there anything on page 3? Can I call for removal for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Mulebazi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Any seconder? Honorable Kumar. Any objection for the adoption of the minutes? None. Thank you very much. The minutes will be so adopted with corrections on that particular paragraph. The next item on the agenda is a recommendation report on the legislative proposal to amend Labor Relations Act. You will recall, honorable members, that 2 weeks down the line we discussed the Labor Relations Act proposed amendment forwarded to us by Honorable Ollis. and we are now considering the draft report, which I want to believe also it's in your packages. So can we talk to it if there anything? Is it your answer? Oh, I thought. Honorable Ben.
Chairperson, reading I think it's a paragraph 2. On the last paragraph, that's point 1 and point 2. Reading point 2, it further says, having consulted the committee legal advice, the proposal is found to have conflict with certain provisions of the Constitution. Chairperson, I'll propose that we add on being slightly direct when we make reference to that, being specific, where I would propose that we then say inter alia, Section 17 read with Section 11 of the Regulations of Gatherings Act 205 of 1993. It was very explicit, because if we leave it hanging like that, it does not then indicate as to what are we actually referring to in the entire Constitution.
Thank you very much. Honorable Killian.
Chairperson, actually, I have read through the legal advisor's evaluation of the legislative proposal, and I just wanted to know if we could perhaps speak to the legal advisor, because there are a few issues that I would have liked to engage with the person. I think it's important for us to consider the status of legislation and constitutional rights, and then be 100% sure what is it that we are deciding upon not to proceed with a legislative proposal. It would be wrong for the committee to consider legislation which might be in conflict with the Constitution. So it is important for us to determine if certain constitutional rights would be limited to the extent that it is beyond Section 36(1) of the Constitution. Because some of the rights in the Constitution actually are very specific about freedom of expression, and I would like to say that it's not only freedom of movement and the right to strike, etc., but it says very specifically in freedom of expression, subsection 2, the right to subsection 1 does not extend to A, propaganda for war, B, incitement of imminent violence, or C, advocacy of hatred that is based on race, ethnicity, gender, blah, blah, blah. So my argument would be that we need to engage with a legal advisor on the determination that it might be in conflict with the Constitution. And I would like to understand better why that was the conclusion. Can we perhaps engage?
I think you are also brings this to what it has been worrying me for some time, that when we have got a legal opinion, the legal unit should be here to back up where we wanted clarification, and to my concern is they are not here. I don't know how do we then get, to be clarified on the issues you have raised. Can you just please check with him over the phone? Sometimes what is worrying me, you said it yesterday, that the number of the legal, backup is a issue for concern. Honorable Kukopa.
But as I said yesterday, I actually checked the number. It is 9 legal advisors for the entire parliament. So they must attend to all the committees of the NA, as well as the NCOP, as well as all the ad hoc committees that are that are sort of dealing with legislation. And that is why we are not adequately capacitated as members of parliament to have the necessary backup. And we are actually exposed to departmental sort of officials that often only portray their perspective, whereas we must work through it very systematically to make sure that we don't have pressure cooker legislation, which will ultimately explode in our faces, as we have seen with the Cape High Court ruling.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was going to say this, I was sharing the same sentiment with Honorable Killian, that the legal advisor should have been here, because one of the information that was sent to us before this one that you got it this morning, the package, one of the last paragraphs of the legal opinion, he was saying that it's difficult to analyze the constitutionality of the legislative proposal, as it's not unclear. So I was also confused that being somebody with a legal background, if he's not sure of himself about the constitutionality of the matter, how is he expecting us to go forward with this matter? But on the same breath, the matter as we're speaking right now, it is in front of the Constitutional Court. Now, does it mean that he didn't want to dent his image because the matter is in front of the Constitutional Court? And it was also of the opinion that as a committee here, since the matter is in front of the Constitutional Court, why should we go forward to finalize this matter? Because whatever we should have concluded today, maybe the outcome of the Constitutional Court might be different to what we have agreed, that we have to redo the whole thing again. But in future, maybe for the process of our committee, the legal advisor should be here when we're debating the legal issue, especially when they've provided us with information before us.
Thank you, Honorable Kopan. They're trying to trace the whereabouts of the man. Either might be stuck in the traffic or stuck in another meeting. It's possible he might be in another meeting. I'm not sure what is the feeling of members here to say, because of the matter being, you know, before Constitutional Court, and the matter being before the Committee of Parliament, how do we handle it? Do we pronounce our situation, or we wait for the Constitutional Court to give the final, you know, decision? How do we move forward, Honourable Van der Westhuizen?
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague, Honourable Hollis, is probably better equipped to answer your question, as I think he has been following this whole saga with much more interest than I have. But quite often, when a court makes a ruling, they also give their reasons for their ruling, and that might be, you know, bring a lot of clarity also to us, that if we want to draft something that will pass the test of the Constitution, that we don't step into, you know, those traps that we may step in now. So I want to turn to my colleague and ask if he would be happy for us to wait a little while for the Constitutional Court to make their ruling. Let's then ask our legal advisors to analyze that ruling and say, you know, what does it say in terms of the legislative process? How should we go about, what should we avoid in the wording of any such amendments? And hopefully then we can forward it to, and I think it would probably be the Portfolio Committee on Labour that will deal with it. And then, you know, hopefully that committee will also be in a better position to consider the merits of this proposal. So if my colleague is happy, I think your suggestion of perhaps, you know, deferring it until we have greater clarity might have merit.
While I hear the point you are raising, at the same time I've asked a question that required us to have, you know, the understanding of either the rules and the Constitution itself, to say, is it when the case, a matter of any magnitude, that is before us, it's also, you know, before the Constitutional Court, which way should we go? Should we wait for the Constitutional Court decision, or we continue whether the Constitutional Court, and I know that in the rules it doesn't say anything in that regard. So it is one area that we should also identify and then send it to the Rules Committee to say there are situations where we are supposed to deal with a matter that on the same footing it's before the Constitutional Court. How do we deal with that? So that rules should speak to that. We should not be left for our own discretion. You see? Because for now, it means we are going to apply our, you know, whatever we might feel is rational, giving us a better understanding without backup of any resource document of Parliament. Honourable Kumar. Honourable Bengu, I'm sorry.
Oh. Next to Kumar.
Chairperson, I think as a committee we just have to, as you correctly said, the question of the rules. We have to set a precedent. And that will also influence the rules committee. I would then say from our side that we, as much as I've heard the honourable members across when they bring up this matter, to have this matter suspended. And because now it's before the Constitutional Court, as it is said. Now to run parallel issues at the same time, it's not going to augur well. It will end up challenging us. So if the matter is before the Constitutional Court, just like the sexual thing, if we had had a parallel, you know, activities regarding the very same one, then it wouldn't all go well. So I'm then proposing, Chairperson, that we pend this matter pending the finalization of the Constitutional Court hearing.
Chairperson, thank you. I'm covered by my colleague.
Chairperson, the only thing that I'm interested to know is exactly what is the issue that is before the Constitutional Court? Is it exactly the same one?
No,
absolutely. Because we need clarity on that. Because if it is, we cannot proceed with it. Mm-hmm. Because the rule 67 makes it abundantly clear that no member shall refer to any matter on which a judicial decision is pending
in any court.
So that then will make it impossible for us to make a final determination because then we must... But the issue, as I say, is what is exactly before the Constitutional Court? Yeah, it's unclear what is the question before the Constitutional Court. Maybe it does not really affect us. So we must just determine that as well, thank
you. Let me take this opportunity that the legal person has arrived to clarify that as to why do we have to, have this, that the matter is before court, what exactly is before court that affects our work that we are doing. I'm sure before you can even speak, there's been this concern that once you send us a legal opinion, you should be here for clarification once and once to be clarified. So, start with that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. I wrote a legal opinion on the 29th of June last year regarding the Honourable Member Ellis's proposal to amend the Labour Relations Act. And the matter before the Constitutional Court deals with the Regulation of Gatherings Act and not with the Labour Relations Act specifically. But why it has implications for this matter is because it deals specifically with curtailing the right to strike and the right of protest action, because there's a big difference between protest action and striking. Striking eventually becomes in protest action when there's violence and there's actual marching. Strike is just the cessation of work or working hours. So there's a big difference between striking and protest action, so that's the first distinction. But the matter before the Constitutional Court then deals specifically with protest action, and it's the right to strike and the right to protest action under the Labour Relations Act. So if that's the distinction, if members understand, then what I'm saying is Ms. Jarvis took the matter to the Cape High Court on the basis under the Regulation of Gatherings Act, but that the implication of that judgment is that it curtails the right to strike under the Constitution. So that is what is being taken to the Constitutional Court because it has implications for the right to strike, and that's why it's important to that we wait rather to see what the Constitutional Court says and what the implications are, because the two parties, Setau and Ms. Jarvis, have taken to the Constitutional Court, but only the constitutional issue of the right to strike. They've left all other matters at the Supreme Court of Appeals, and those have then been finalized. So it's just the constitutional issue of the right to strike and the labor relations rights under the Constitution.
Now, the question
on the legal amount. Can I just ask, by saying that they've left all the other matters at the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court found against Setawi in the matter on the appeal and awarded financial damages in the case. Does that mean that Setawi has accepted the damages?
It seems so, Honourable Member. The matter that they've taken specific to the Constitutional Court is how their right to strike under the court, the labour relations right, which is the right to strike under the Constitution as well, how the control of public demonstrations, the right to strike, protest action under the Regulation of Gatherings Act, how that curtailment then impacts on their right to strike under the section in the Constitutional Court. So it seems that they have accepted that there are costs and that they're willing to pay those costs pending the outcome of the Constitutional Court matter, of course.
That's actually extremely significant, because what that means is that what is now established at law is that unless there's a change in the Constitutional Court ruling, it means that collectives may be made to pay punitive damages for individuals in their organization, and they've not appealed that. Setawi has not appealed that. That is a hugely significant issue, which means that this amendment is going in the right direction, although it may be not correctly worded and it may be something that should be taken in the Gatherings Act rather than in the Labour Relations Act. What it does mean is that it means that this proposal has huge merit, because they've accepted the fact that the union can be sued for the behaviour of individual members of the union who damage cars and break into shops and all of that. That's it's a hugely significant point.
Thank you, Gary, and thank you, Honourable Hollis. I think the point before us is whether Rule 67 carry weight on what we are going to, you know, decide on, to say no member should refer to a matter that is before pending a court decision. I'm not sure, because where we are sitting as of now, it's not about a member, it's about a parliament. We are a structure of a parliament, which correctly we can refer to as parliament. Whether parliament cannot decide on a law that is before, you know, a court, I'm not sure whether does it then say to me that is what it's supposed to say, if you have an understanding on it. But I'm bringing it so that when we use it, we should be able to, you know, to defend and substantiate on why we have taken a decision pending, or I mean, based on Section 67 of the rules. Before you come, I thought let him try to talk to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. There is a distinction between Rule 67 and general case law when it comes to sub judice. Rule 67 has been interpreted very restrictively in that it says no member shall refer to any matter on which a judicial decision is pending, which means that any mentioning, even in a question to a minister, etc., is out of bounds in terms of Rule 67. Now, for me, that's a bit too restrictive. But the rule stands as it is. So as such, the committee is then bound by Rule 67 until such a time as it changes. And we heard that the speaker yesterday mentioned that there are certain rules, that the rules of the NA might be coming in soon. So the rule stands as it is, unfortunately, or fortunately.
So which then is saying we are going to be bound by Rule 67. I think also furthering this debate, there's a sub judice matter. We are using this term in a very vague and loose way.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, when you said there is a case, you said, no, the matter is sub judice. A sub judice, it should be, you know, per the order of the court to say, don't talk about this matter based on 1, 2, 3, 4. But people are becoming loosely to say, no, don't, it's a sub judice. Prove to us the sub judice part of, you know, the issue in case. But because this is our rules, it's our, we have made, you know, vague and very, you know, lousy kind of rules. What can I do? I'm a part of parliament. I have to take them as they are. Honorable Kelly.
Chairperson, may we abuse the opportunity that we have advocate here, that we're just asking some questions about his opinion. If you will allow that. I just wanted to ask him, it is always very interesting to look at the rights and the obligations and the responsibilities and the balances that we have within the Bill of Fundamental Rights. One of the sections that I don't see that he touched on, well, actually two, is within strike action. We have noted that shops have been attacked, people's cars, people were running away with their merchandise, etc. So clearly, Section 12 also comes into play, and that is the freedom and security of persons. And specifically, Section 1C. To be free from all forms of violence from either public or private sources. So that makes the state responsible to ensure a balance of rights between the right to strike unarmed, which he referred to in Section 17, and, you know, to picket, etc. But there is a right clearly for persons as well, for the general public. So that right is also affected through strike action, or can I say, intimidation during strike action, as well as Section 16, which is freedom of expression. You have a freedom of expression. You can walk, you can picket, you can display whatever you want to. It's part of your right to freedom of expression. But subsection 2 says specifically, the right in subsection 1 does not extend to A, propaganda for war, B, incitement of imminent violence. And that is also something that is sometimes an element of some of the strike and picket actions. So clearly, and I missed that in his, so I think he kicked for touch, quite frankly. If I look at this, he says it's a difficult one to make a final ruling on. But I think for completeness sake, we also need to look at the other rights of people who are affected by strikes and see, you know, what do we do about that? If we don't want to do anything because we're now going to affect the rights of the strikers, but what about the rights of the other people who are affected by those strikes? Those who don't want to march are being intimidated to march, etc., etc. So I don't see that in his. And then also, secondly, I trust that I did not quite read it correctly. You make reference to certain court rulings, etc., etc., and certain provisions of legislation, which is not the supreme law of the country, which is the Constitution. And only the Constitutional Court can really make a final determination on the constitutionality and those rights that are affected of other people within such a situation. Do you want to please comment on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Member. With regard to the first question, As you said, it is very difficult when you're weighing up two rights which are contained in the Constitution, which is the right to struggle labor relations rights, and then the first one which you mentioned, the right of all freedom from violence, and the second one is, freedom of expression. It's very difficult to weigh up those rights, and there's a specific procedure that you need to look at. You have to see if there's a less restrictive means of curtailing the one right vis-a-vis the other right, and it starts going into a very, very burdensome constitutional test when you weigh up those rights. In my the reason why I took this approach, in my opinion, is that in looking specifically at the labor relations rights as protected in the Constitution, it deals specifically with two parties, and this is where I started. The Labor Relations Rights deals with, which then deals specifically with the Labor Relations Act and Employment Equity Act and all the other labor relations legislation deals specifically with two parties, the employee and the employer. And the moment you open up the gate to allow third party in terms of that labor relations protections in the Constitution, you're opening up the Constitution through interpretive ways, which for me, I'm a bit wary about doing that because I'm not the Constitutional Court and I can't make those interpretations. So when you look at the case before us, in the case of Jarvis, there's a third party, which is this woman whose property was destroyed, well, a range of people whose property was destroyed, and allowing them to curtail the right to strike, which is protected in the Constitution under section that deals only with the employer and employee, for me, I'm a bit wary to do that because it means that we're interpreting the Constitution in a specific way that's not sanctioned by the Constitutional Court. Now, that the Constitutional Court might in the future, in the Jarvis matter, interpret to say, no, it's fine. In the cases where there are strikes and where strike then leads to protest actions, becomes violent and property is destroyed, that one can then look at. But I think it's important that we look at the fact that this action was brought under the Regulation of Gatherings Act and not under the Labor Relations Act. So that, for me, is a critical distinction, the fact that I'm fearful of interpreting sections of the Constitution in such a way as it brings in parties, specifically the labor relations section, that it brings in parties who are not essentially part to that employee-employee relationship. That's my fear.
I think my understanding is we are agreeing that let's allow the Constitutional Court to take a decision, then we'll come, you know, and then finalize the matter when you want that. Therefore, our research unit should then trace and follow. Immediately they take a decision, then we should have an opportunity to take a decision on the matter. But I think in future, Gary, it may be important that when you are giving an opinion and there are different scenario leading to one issue. When the same protect the strikers, at the same time protect the civilian, the citizens of the country, you should show on your opinion to say these are the two. But when you strive a balance, we arrive at this. You know, trying to look at these areas and this and that. Then it will bring the balance. But if you look at one side, you ignore the other. It opens for challenges because those who will be challenging, they would use the other side to say, and that it will look like the committee has not been, you know, given an opportunity of looking at this other side. So try to strike a balance of both, you know, for and against. So that when you said, therefore, we conclude favoring this side, you would have been shown how do we, you know, see the weakness of the other side, not just, you know, seem like thought. The other people will thought they only look at the right of the strikers and they did not look at the other side. So it, let it be important tomorrow moving forward. Final question.
Thank you, Jim. I also suggest that when we get that opinion after the court has ruled, the legal advisor also advises us as to where the appropriate amendments, should amendments be indicated, be brought about. Is it in the Labour Relations Act, or should, if Member Ollis is concerned about what he has observed, should that rather be brought about in the Public Gatherings Act, please?
Thank you very much. Do we agree that we'll wait for the decision of the court before we finalise the matter? Honourable Koppan.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find our legal advisor there. If the matter is, like you are saying, that is not a constitutional person per se, is it possible that on his side, when he started to realise this thing is a constitutional matter, can he also consult? Or is just within him, he can just say it's not to do with me, so I can't go further. Can you also consult the constitutional people on a certain issue? Or is it not possible?
Yeah. Thank you, Member. I do take into consideration the constitutional matters, and in this case I did again take into consideration the constitutional matters. What just to clarify is that where you are balancing rights, two rights contained in the Constitution, one is to be very wary about how you balance those rights. And it's a very onerous and distinct constitutional test that the judge, that the Constitutional Court justices take into account, and it's step by step. But recently there has been such a almost equal split either way, and one has seen that from 2010 onwards, from 2011 onwards, around Glenys the time, where the Constitutional Court is literally split almost equally when it comes to the balancing of rights contained in the Constitution. That's just, I mean, that's where my fear is. Not to say, though, that I don't take into account constitutional issues and how they impact on proposals that are brought before the committee.
But, yes, we
are. Are you? Oh, don't need this. Oh, no, please. I grew up in my mother's home, I can't go there.
Chairperson, I just wanted to also then establish, if we would have said in our committee report that having consulted the committee legal advisor, the proposal is found to have conflict with certain provisions of the Constitution, would we not be wrong? Should it not be best to say, having consulted the legal advisor, that he indicated that this was a very complex constitutional matter and that only ultimately the Constitutional Court could determine on the rights and the balance of rights contained in the Bill of Fundamental Rights?
I mean, if we were to pass it now, I think that was going to be the road.
That would be a better option for us, because if we then interpret his legal opinion, I mean, towards the end of his legal opinion, he actually says this is a complex matter. So I don't think we should bind him with this, having stated as such, if we would have proceeded.
Okay. So for now, let's stop here, because we are going to have sufficient time to study the, you know, the judgments and so on and so on. Is there any contrary view on the decision? Thank you very much. The matter will then be decided sometimes in future. For now, thank you, and the meeting is then so adjourned.
Okay. I thought I must have to see you. Me too. My stock is